Okay, why don't we get started? Welcome to From Testing to Deployment, How to Build Secure, Reliable, and Compliant Web 2.0 Applications. My name is Wayne Ariola, and I'm from Carahsoft. Also on the line, I have Scott Morrison, Chief Architect from Layer 7. And we're going to take about 25 minutes to highlight some of the challenges, as well as approaches to build secure, reliable, compliant Web 2.0 applications. So to start, let us briefly introduce our organizations, and let me introduce Scott Morrison.
Thanks, Wayne. As Wayne mentioned, my name is Scott Morrison, and I'm VP of Engineering at Layer 7, but also Chief Architect. And what Layer 7 does is we build security infrastructure for Web 2 and Web Services, so installations, to allow you to effectively manage security, access control, SLA, all of those kinds of important factors and characteristics of the services in your network.
That's great. You know, I'm even saying Web 2.0 still, Scott, so I gotta upgrade my lingo.
Well, we're going to have Web 3 pretty soon. So.
That's true. This is Wayne Ariola, and I'm from Carahsoft. And Carahsoft, you know, we're out there trying to provide software development organizations an automated infrastructure to control and improve the process of developing software applications. Our solutions are out there to allow IT organizations to evolve a sustainable process that delivers, hopefully, more predictable outcomes. I've been with Carahsoft for about 5 years, and I can personally attest that Carahsoft customers achieve greater productivity, as well as significantly fewer software defects. Over the past 20 years, Carahsoft has really spent its time investigating how and why software errors are generated. And with that type of approach, we've been able to evolve solutions that automatically prevent or eliminate errors by addressing their root causes. With that, let me switch into Web 2. And in terms of Web 2, the impacts, not only to quality, but as we will go into further detail with Layer 7, what are the impacts to security? So as we know, I think most of the organizations out there, you've probably heard the term Web 2.0 or Web 2, and in that, it really means a more of a rich Internet experience. And as we see these rich Internet applications becoming more pervasive, it is becoming the norm. So my example I always use is when Google Maps came out and I started to use the interaction and value that Google Maps added, I really stopped using other applications that weren't as sophisticated. So they're becoming more pervasive by the mere functionality they provide and the value it delivers to the consumer. That being said, these applications are also extraordinarily more dynamic, and they have a hybrid nature associated to it, meaning that they take in various data sources, both internally and externally. They actually take on more functionality within the actual site itself. Now, the customers that I have that have been moving through and evolving a Web 2 application, leveraging such technologies as Ajax or perhaps Flex, they really start addressing this application and the evolution of this application as a constant state of beta, meaning that the agility that this particular technology offers them gives them the capability to continuously evolve functionality, and this constant state of beta becomes overwhelmed with the development department.
Yeah, and let me add to that, actually. One of the things about Web 2 is that really when you look at a lot of the successful Web 2 applications out there, you recognize very quickly that a lot of the core technologies that are being used really are still there. You still use protocols like HTTP. You still use things like web servers, application servers, load balancers. What's new, however, is a couple of new technological underpinnings, which are sort of been refactored and applied in a new way to build these richer, you know, more elegant applications, you know, things like Google Maps and a lot of the things that have been coming out of Yahoo lately. And so it's technologies like Ajax, like RSS feeds, like some of the new things that are coming out with Atom, and basic XML, which has been out for quite a number of years now, all applied together in this stew, which really make up this whole Web 2 thing. The problem, though, and the thing that we want to be able to address, both within Carahsoft and Layer 7, is to give you the tools so that you can effectively manage the complexity that is brought in by a lot of this new, you know, technology that's underpinning Web 2 in general. So back to you, Wayne.
Yeah, I think it's a great point, Scott. And let me just make a note right now for the participants. If you'd like to ask a question, there's a QA box and a chat box that you can actually send a message in. We'll receive that, and we'll be addressing questions at the end of the session as well. So back to the challenges. The challenges that are presented are exactly what Scott just laid out. So in general, our systems are becoming more complex. Our environments, as well as the sources and elements within the application itself, whether they're old or new, are becoming more distributed. Those are the two primary components, but it actually there's another layer in there. And you know, I address this in the concept of change. We now have the ability to leverage a number of different disparate technologies in a manner that we can add a distinct level of value to a rich internet application. With that, though, or with this agility, comes this constant phase of change. And with that, though, there is the need to readdress the way we are going about validating or vetting an application in order to not only have a more predictable outcome, but also to be assured that our end product is what we expect. So there's really four areas that I like to focus on here. One is dependable, two is consistency, and the concept of consistency. Three is this concept of reusability within the quality process, which I'll go into a little bit. And last is this predictable nature. So dependable. In order for us to have dependable outcomes or dependable products at this point, we really need accuracy in our test suites. And really what this means is that we need trust in order to create a trusted test suite and noiseless test suites that target in and test really what matters. Automation is absolutely key. And it's key in the Web 2.0 arena because of the complexity of that it introduces. Let me just give you an example. If you pop up Google Maps, for example, you are faced with a number of different options that you can call. Those options actually make an asynchronous call to a back-end data source and reply back with some data as well. You're not refreshing the entire page, yet the permutation of actions that you can take as a user increase. They're actually through the roof now. You need automation to assist you to make sure that the functions on that particular page are dependable. That's the key of the main concept about dependability. Next, consistency. And Scott is going to go into this around the concept of security, but let me reinforce it from an overall quality perspective. So for the concepts of security, reliability, performance, maintainability of your overall application, we need to implement a policy-based approach that allows us to deliver consistency in our application. Not only should the policy be defined and those expectations of the policy be delineated, but these policies must be enforced, and they must be enforced automatically. And I know Scott's going to have some great insight for us in these following slides. The whole concept here, though, kind of chains on each other. With the policy and with policy enforcement becomes a more consistent behavior and a more consistent outcome in your application. Overall, though, this actually produces trust. And this trust that you can get out of this type of approach, which is quite simple, by the way. I mean, the automation that is available in order to enforce these types of policies is out there and is very, very feasible to use within your development environment. But the trust that comes out of that means that we're going to have this concept of reusability, we're going to be reusing data sources more conveniently, and we're going to be able to evolve or be more agile in the way that we're actually evolving applications. Which leads me to reusability, or the concept of reusability. Currently, in today's process, we are taking many, many steps to ensure quality, but they seem to be isolated within the total process of delivering a quality application. That being said, there's a very logical evolution on the steps we should be taking to ensure quality at step one, to the final stage, and I'm going to go into this in some slides a little bit later, but to actually make sure that we're auditing or get into this concept of a functional audit later in the process. There's no reason why we cannot reuse test assets that are created or delivered early in the process later on. The fact of the matter that we're creating test assets that are leverageable later in the process means that we have the capability to test what changes and also test what matters. So this concept of reusability is going to be key. Finally, predictability. And predictability comes in two fashions. One, do I have controls in place that allow me to have an outcome that I can be assured of? And two, can I actually map that back to requirements so I know what I deployed is actually what I'm asking for? So if I look at these challenges along the lines, and these are actually the challenges for quality, let's apply them now to really the Web 2.0 application. So in a Web 2.0 application, we are going to, this really truly requires a bottom-up and a top-down infrastructure. Like Scott said before, we're reusing many components out there that have been here with us for a very long time. In some cases, we are going to be asking those components to do something that we didn't originally plan it to do. And in other cases, we're going to be evolving new components on top of that in order to evolve as well as increase the usability of the particular application. That being said, we need a bottom-up approach and a top-down approach. The bottom-up approach really starts with this policy-based enforcement. With the policy-based enforcement, we are truly going to implement an error prevention methodology. Given the fact that we have an expectation between the deliverable, which is the application of the code, and the developer, the person delivering the application of the code, we, via this policy, we're able to enforce that as well as prevent many errors from entering the project early in the cycle. The next thing we need to do is really focus on the requirements themselves and build continuous regression test suites that validate the requirement has been implemented. Now, the good thing about frameworks such as Parasoft's testing framework that's out there today, any test that you actually evolve in order to prove a requirement has been vetted or not, we can actually sign into our framework and provide you a more robust, rich regression test that allows you to exercise that requirement now many different ways. So when you suck that into our framework, we'll be able to create positive test cases via parameterization, negative test cases, security test cases, and corner test cases in order to really exercise the requirement. With this step in place, this capability to create a continuous regression suite, you have now begun the baseline for change-based testing. And the key for change-based testing in this environment is the fact that we would like to evolve a very agile development process that allows us to only test what changes or test what the impacts are. At this case, or when we have come to this level of maturity in our quality process, we'll be able to really have a process that is in lockstep with the agile development capabilities within our organization. Finally, the last step is really should be a functional audit. And what I talk about here usually with my clients is the fact that your CFO really is not waiting for their certified public accountants to come in to do a quality check. They're there to do an audit, to make sure all the T's are crossed, all the I's are dotted. QA needs to be used in the same manner as your certified public accountants. We've really extended their workload to turn them into a quality organization or a testing organization, which is what they were not, or what they were not usually or expected to do in the first place. We need to get back to the stage where they're actually checking it off, ensuring the functionality, and releasing that product out the door, not finding bugs. So back to Web 2.0, where are the quality hotspots? There's a number of them. And the first quality hotspot is with the data services itself. And there's two flavors of these. There's the internal services, and then there's the external services, or the third-party services. These can be web services, they could be RSS feeds, they could be REST-based XML, they can be or REST-based services, it could be XML, plain old Java objects. These services are the first quality hotspot. In many different applications or implementations I've seen of Web 2.0, what I've seen out there is the fact that the data sources are unstable or yet to be defined has been really the fly in the ointment. It turns into an integration type of finger-pointing exercise when these are not robust, when they are not validated or vetted, and it slows down the implementation of the whole project. The requirements here, I believe, is that you need good visibility and a quality check or a health check into these data services that are pumping into your rich internet applications, and have good visibility each one of them to make sure that they're robust, they're acting as they expect, and they perform as expected. The second area is within the source code itself. And this really goes back to what Scott had mentioned early on, that in many cases we're leveraging our old frameworks to do something brand new. If that is truly the case, we need to vet that framework or vet those old applications to make sure that they are capable functionally as well as performance oriented in order to achieve what we're expecting them to now achieve. So given that, really a component-based test or component-based test around the actual application layer is very, very key. Additionally, when it comes to security, these policies need to be enforced against the actual application itself to make sure that we are enforcing the security policies that have been defined early in the process. The next layer is really just the web app and the web server. Here is a critical component not only for security, but also in terms of vetting the functionality of the asynchronous messages. So in this case, the exercising this component, performance testing this component, is a distinct quality hotspot for these AJAX-based programs or Flex RIA-based programs. Now, if we split the picture between client and server, let's take the whole client aspect separately. One of the distinct aspects to these RIA-based applications are the asynchronous or JavaScript-based messages. JavaScript is a little squirrely, as you know. It's a non-compiled language, and what you need to do is have early capabilities to vet the JavaScript itself. If we are able to pass the JavaScript through a code analyzer and look to see if it complies to a policy for security, reliability, performance, and maintainability of the JavaScript, we are going to prevent many errors later on in the process. Errors within JavaScript might not manifest themselves early in the process, but the experience is that once they are embedded, they are very, very difficult to find. So having automated code analysis tools vetting the JavaScript early in the process is a must. The second half of this equation is really vetting the functionality given a asynchronous call. So we are traditionally used to testing the synchronous messages that bring down the HTML, the style sheets, and the actual look and feel of the application. But this new asynchronous call is a little bit different beast. In order to be successful in testing out or one of the quality hotspots of this, in order to be successful in testing this out, is to be able to freeze the back-end server, stub it out, and understand the impact of this asynchronous call as it's being rendered to the web browser, or what is the impact to the back-end server. Our products, such as Parasoft WebKing, do a great job of this. Most applications or web-based testing applications have not necessarily been structured in order to manage these asynchronous type of messages. Yet, what you need to be able to do is freeze a component to be able to introspect whether you're looking at a distinct server-based issue or a distinct client-based issue, or do you have something wrong within the unit of the asynchronous call itself. So these are the quality hotspots that really bring raise their head during a Web 2.0 deployment. So what are the steps? From Parasoft's perspective, there are a few steps that you need to be able to take advantage of immediately in order to ensure secure, reliable, compliant applications. The first one is try to emulate the environment as best as possible in development. And Scott could have some few words on this as well. And I think it's very, very key. The next, and I can't overemphasize this, is enforce JavaScript best practices. So as I mentioned before, JavaScript is a non-compile language. Having the capability to enforce a certain quality of that JavaScript is going to alleviate a tremendous amount of pain later on. And Scott could obviously compound on this one, but create and enforce a security policy. And this needs to occur at a number of different layers within the application. It needs to occur at the message layer. It needs to occur at the application layer. And obviously, we're going to spend a little bit more time in this presentation talking about that. Validate the interaction with the back-end web services. This layer of analysis and this layer of testing is critical in order to take a more component-based view of quality. If we're truly able to analyze and extend this out and test from a web services perspective or any kind of data service perspective, we're going to be more successful in the future as we start consolidating and massaging or understanding the behavior of each of the components. One of the last points I made in the previous slide was to verify the asynchronous and synchronous messages. You need a this is really one of the first needs for a very distinct and robust automated tool. The asynchronous calls are, as you know, on a page can be, the permutations of these calls can be very broad, meaning that there's really no distinct workflow that you can assume on a page now. Automation to verify the asynchronous and synchronous messages is really a necessary step. Number six, test UI components and the JavaScript engine. An automated framework is necessary for this as well. If you are vetting an automated framework to assist you in testing these components, make sure it is built with Web 2.0 applications in mind. And finally, construct end-to-end functional scenarios. And this seems to be the end-all, catch-all. But if you're doing all of number 1 through 6 correctly, you truly should be able to reuse your test components to construct end-to-end functional scenarios. And I know from our perspective at Parasoft, our goal is to reuse the effort that you've already taken in order to extend out a functional scenario to vet that application more quickly. So all that being said, let me actually pass it over to Scott now, and really let's talk a little bit more about security and how to enforce a security policy.
Great. Thanks a lot, Wayne. So we've seen an excellent example, actually, in Wayne's discussion of how you can actually, you know, build up a secure application, using sort of iterative processes from the ground up and test them very, very effectively with Parasoft tools. What I want to do is now look at what some of the new pieces of infrastructure are that can help you actually enforce security, as a literal physical layer between the outside world and your applications, and also show you how you can use that to build up a new effective security policy in conjunction with the kind of testing tools that that Parasoft puts out. So what I'll show you first of all is let's look at a good example of what development often looks like. So if we look down on this diagram in the lower left, what we see is some kind of developer looking through a web browser and going up there on the upper right, hitting some kind of web application server. Now, this is a time-honored Web 1 approach to actually doing, any kind of web application development. Somebody sits down there and, goes through all sorts of different scenarios manually and that and tries to pull it all together and, make sure that all the corner cases have been covered. It works fairly effectively until you start to scale into more complex, richer applications. And that's where tools like Parasoft really, really shine. Because essentially they let you iteratively, start to build out test cases that can, cover your tracks. So as you build more and more sophisticated, Web 2 applications, as they grow in features and that, you still got automated regression and that behind you. Now, what I want to talk about here is, as you move into these Web 2 applications, what's the key new challenge that you need to deal with? And in particular, how can you start to apply new infrastructure to helping you out there? And the first thing I'd like to say about that really is that, you can't forget security and decide it's going to be something that you can apply later on. Security fundamentally has to be something that's built into an application at the very beginning. It can't be, the thing that gets pushed to the very end of the release cycle and inevitably sort of falls off the end of the release. It actually has to be sort of intimately connected up with the whole concept, the whole business concept of what the application is about. We start to get into this whole concept of what I call tunable policy, which is really this sort of idea that different security policies have to be applied to different kinds of services and different kinds of modules. And you need a very, very effective way of sort of building that in and refining those models. So here's a good example. Let's imagine you're building some kind of new Web 2 application going into a stock trading service. And over the last couple of years, the people that actually run the brokerage or the exchange house have taken their legacy equipment and their their trading equipment and started to surface out a number of new APIs for you using, let's say, web services technology. So these are XML APIs that allow you to send in a SOAP message and affect some kind of processing on the mainframe and then get back some kind of response. Well, think about two of probably the most common pieces of functionality they're going to make available. I mean, the first one is obviously get quote or get stock quote. I mean, we all use this constantly where, we hit a finance site to get maybe a 10-minute delayed quote or something like that to tell us, what the current stock price is of whatever our favorite stock that we're tracking is. Now, think about the security characteristics of that particular application. I mean, really, there's no good reason to secure that, beyond very, very simple, control of maybe number of requests a second or something like that. So in other words, it's an anonymous service. It doesn't have any, necessarily have any integrity needs on it. Excuse me. It doesn't have to, the sender of the message, the sender of the original transaction, is not incumbent to show any kind of credentials or anything like that. I mean, we can all get this information off the web anonymously anytime. We don't have to use SSL. We don't have to, worry about any of those kinds of things. Now, in contrast, look at the service right beside it, the buy stock service. Now, all of a sudden, buy stock, although ostensibly it's maybe going into the same server and, might even be implemented with a lot of shared code that, the quote service has radically different security needs on it. You obviously have to authenticate yourself. You always have to prove who you are because, the server needs to know who's buying stock. Integrity is absolutely essential because you don't want some man in the middle to flip a bid and turn your, buy stock request for 100 shares into 10,000 shares. And similarly, you probably need some kind of confidentiality because nobody wants people to know, exactly what they're buying and what they're selling at any one time, particularly if they're, some high-profile trader or something like that. So here's two very, very similar, services in the background that need two very radically different security policies. So the thing you've got to ask yourself is, how can you effectively manage that? Because obviously, the sort of time-honored old approach to implementing that level of security was to actually build the security into the application itself. And that was okay when you had a very homogeneous world. So in other words, all of your servers were, one type of web server, for instance. But really, when you think about it, the whole point of going to things like service-oriented architectures, web services, technologies like XML and basic HTTP, level web servers was for application integration. It was there as a sort of a lingua franca to allow us to tie together all sorts of different applications. So by definition, in a service-oriented architecture, you've usually got a very heterogeneous mix of different systems. You might have a Microsoft .NET server and a J2EE application server, and over here you've got an Apache web server with Perl modules and things like that in it. You're tying together a lot of different functionality, and each one of those different servers, although they may be able to, produce web services calls, they may be able to surface XML messages in a very similar way. Each one of those fundamentally has different ways of implementing that. And from a security point of view, that's a problem. Because the soul of good security is ultimately consistency. It's doing everything the same way, in the same, manner for all of your different applications. And now I don't mean, making all of your different services authenticated or anything like that. What I mean is that, for shared kinds of applications, like where when you do authentication, you need to do authentication the same way in all cases. So what you need then is a way of consolidating that security into sort of a central point where you can manage it declaratively using one, effective view for all of those back-end services, regardless of whether one of them is J2EE or one of them is .NET or one of them is Perl or something like that. In other words, you want to consolidate it. You want to centralize again. And you know what? That's effectively what we do at Layer 7. What I want to show you is a new piece of infrastructure called the SecureSpan XML Data Screen. Now, what this is it's a hardware device. It's a one-U rack mount appliance. You can plug it in right beside your firewalls and routers and everything like that. And effectively what it does is it intercepts XML streams going in or out of an organization, and it can apply security policies to those. So it identifies the XML stream, characterizes it as going to get stock quotes, or going to buy stock, or maybe even going to sell stock, or insert record into database. And it applies policies very specifically for those particular services against that stream of XML. Now, in a policy, we encapsulate all sorts of different things, like forcing the transaction to authenticate itself, mining credentials out of that stream of XML, and maybe validating it against a back-end identity management service, or transforming the message on the fly so that version 1.0 message gets upgraded to a version 2.0 message so it's congruent with the server in the back-end, which, well, got upgraded last week or something like that. So in other words, we're an intermediate, we're a gateway. We sit between clients and servers and protect those servers. We cleanse streams of XML that go through that network, ensuring that they, are exactly to the contract that has been established by the using the XML API. So in a typical deployment where you'd be, let's say, developing applications, looking at a picture very similar to our previous one, we might be deployed sort of like this, right in between that client and that server, intercepting that stream of XML. Now, the reason we talk about iterative policy and tuning policy is that we very much see, an app infrastructure like this not being deployed, at the very end of a development cycle, but being integral to part of the application development cycle. So as you start to build your applications from the very beginning, the moment you sit down and start writing code, you should also be sitting down writing policies to go into this device and refining those security policies. Because fundamentally, although they're decoupled from the application, and by the way, that's a good thing for a lot of reasons, they're still very much integral to that application and its behavior and its security. And so, of course, it also has a great impact on how you test those applications. Because, of course, the tests have to ensure not just that they're compliant with whatever the security model is, but tests also have to, sort of do sanity checks and validations that the security model is working properly. Because here's the thing. The great thing about Web 2 is it's using a lot of technology that we already know a lot about. I mentioned earlier load balancers, HTTP protocol, and routers that we already know a lot about, and web servers and things like that. The problem with it is that it also adds a tremendous new amount of complexity in terms of how you apply security models, where you apply security models, when you apply security models. And so it becomes essential then that testing is testing the whole application, including security, from the very beginning. And so you can truly get into one of these iterative cycles where you've got QA and testers who are working constantly using these kinds of applications, such as Parasoft testing applications, against a device like the SecureSpan data screen, ensuring that that whole application is operating exactly to spec. Now, one of the key areas then, once you've developed your applications, how do you migrate it up into a production environment? And Wayne actually made an excellent point earlier on that you have to build your application in an environment as close to your production environment as possible. And then you also have to have a way of migrating into that production environment seamlessly without introducing new problems. I mean, think of something as simple as, having a pre-production environment where the URLs are slightly different between your production and test environments. That causes no end of problems. I mean, we've all run into those issues before. One of the things we did with the SecureSpan is that we ensured that there was a migration path. So literally, once you've got your policies together, with a few clicks of a mouse, you can migrate from a test environment, like I'm showing you here, to something like this, an actual production environment, where you're hosting not just a single SecureSpan gateway, but an entire cluster of redundant SecureSpan gateways, which share policy information between all of their members, provide failover support and things like that for very, very high reliability. And also can migrate policies such that things like URLs, things like characteristics of the local network are automatically mapped deterministically from one environment to the other. So it takes the human equation out of it. It takes the possibility of making mistakes in your production, in your migration from, you know, development to test to pre-production to production off the table completely. And this is an essential thing, we think, because the last stage that you're going to want to be testing in, and the last stage where you're using testing technologies like what Parasoft offers, are in things like, you know, constant sanity checking and availability checking on your actual running system. And so you have to have those identical, you know, policies operating in an environment like that. So this is where we typically play. We sit behind a firewall in a DMZ, intercepting all those streams of XML and HTTP and things like that going in and out of web application servers. And we've got specific purpose-built hardware that can do very, very fast classification of those images, transformation of those images, validation of those images, or of those documents, and scanning for things like threats, SQL injection, and all of the new XML-based threats that can, you know, potentially attack a back-end web server. So between these two products, between the secure spam data screen clusters and the products out of Parasoft, you get true end-to-end testing, you know, all the way from the very beginning of conception of an application all the way up to its deployment. So with that, I think what I'm going to do is turn it over to questions and answers, and anything you've got, please send to us, and hopefully we'll be able to answer them right now. Thank you.